Welcome back, listener, to our long-awaited wrap-up episode of In a TIFF, which should have been a wrap-up of What I Like to TIFF, but I just made it a combo year-end all the festivals podcast with my friend Norm. So, Norm, great to see you again, and tell the listeners a bit about yourself.
Yeah, good to see you as well. Norm McGlashan. I have a film blog called Flick Hunter, flickhunter.blogspot.com. Not as active on there as I used to be now that I'm a programmer for a film festival, but I do post from time to time movies that are sent my way, more of the off the beaten path film as opposed to the big regular weekly blockbuster. I'm going to try and get some more up there next year is my goal. One of my New Year's resolutions, get some more reviews up at the Flick Hunter. And the festivals that I attend, TIFF, of course, is a major one. I think I saw 47 there this year.
Oh my.
Was going to cut down. I said, I'm only going to do in the 30s. But there was a strong Midnight Madness program. And just started to see those all the time, night after night after night. Also managed to sneak into New York this year. Saw three or four there. Most were good, but made one horrific decision, which we might get into later. And then I'm a programmer for Blood in the Snow Film Festival, Bits for short. It's every November, and that's a genre film festival. And we had a very strong year this year.
Yeah, I unfortunately had to miss it for work, but I have done some work with Bits in the past. And the past few years, it's been really, really strong and is fast becoming my new favorite local film festival.
Oh, it's good to hear.
And for me, as you all know, I sort of started doing this because I would just use all my vacation time and money to go to TIFF. And now I'm going to, I think, start to attend the Windsor Film Festival annually because it's close by and it has a good mix of films that are uniquely ideal for the Windsor audience. They had many union-themed films because it's a big union town that's right across from Detroit. Historically, they've
True,
had a
yeah.
lot of people from the car industry there as well. And so they had a similar kind of depression to Detroit, but not as bad because we actually have, social stuff here. And a friend in Whistler keeps trying to get me to go out there for their film festival as well. But a couple of the Windsor films I saw, she saw at the Whistler Fest. So I may check that out next year as well.
I heard a lot of good things about Whistler from many a source. So if you get a chance to go to that one, I would go to that one.
Well, I got a place to stay there too. So maybe I will go to that one now. So yeah, those, it's a great time to be a festival lover in Canada. I think there's so many options. You don't have to come to Toronto and drop all your change there. You can check out three or four of the other ones and see the big films that you may not be able to get at Toronto, and then still see some other smaller films that you wouldn't get to see somewhere else. But general movie talk. So normally I used to do like a best of TIFF because I used to see almost as many movies as Norm. But this year I sort of did a combo between TIFF and Windsor to get to my kind of 30 plus total of movies that I see in the fall festival season. And there's always like at least one movie that you see there that even if it got a release, not that many people saw it, or it came out at a time when something was going on. I always wonder, like, what were the other good movies that came out during, Barbenheimer, or like there's things that you don't get to see, you don't get to hear about, that you wish you had somebody to talk about with, but you don't because nobody else saw it. So I was wondering for you, what was the movie that you saw this year, whether it was a festival or just a regular release at an indie theater, that you were like, I wish I had people to talk about with this movie, but nobody's seen it.
Mine is Santosh. I did see it at TIFF. Little Indian film. There were some other Indian films that have much more buzz this year than this movie. And it's an odd premise. This woman is married to a police officer, and he gets killed in the line of duty. And she inherits his job, is how it works. So you see her in the beginning. going to pick up his uniform because it's now hers, and the blood's still on it from when he was killed. So that's how it kind of starts. And she's a very good police officer. She has a mentor, and this mentor is by the book, but it's part of the wheels of the system. She expects that the mentor will be more favorable to her, see the female point of view, but she's just a wheel in the cog, and she's identifying this. She's investigating this poor peasant woman who was killed in this small village, and it looks like it's by a group of rich young guys that were involved in her assault and death. And no one's doing anything about it, and she wants to and tries to do something, but of course is met with a zillion roadblocks for this case.
Well, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's an
And I wish
excellent
I'd seen
film.
it so I could have talked about it with you. For me, it was one that I saw at the Windsor Film Fest called The Wasp. And it was a very tight two-hander. I believe maybe the original script was for like stage. So written by Morgan Lloyd Malcolm. And directed by Guillaume Morales. And it's Naomi Harris and Natalie Dormer. And Naomi Harris is playing the wife of what we assume to be sort of a rich, abusive, definitely mentally and emotionally, probably a little bit physically as well, husband who is having an affair or multiple affairs. He's basically a garbage person. And we see her character approach the Natalie Dormer character, who she went to grade school with, and about helping her kill her husband. But then we realize that there's more to why she chose the Natalie Dormer character. Then you start to get flashbacks of pretty intense bullying and a physical assault that Naomi Harris's character has went through when she was a child at the hands of Natalie Dormer's character. And you definitely realize all is not what it seems. It has some great twists. There's some great hints as well in the not just the production design, in the costumes of the different shifts that the Naomi Harris character is taking as you're getting to that last act. And it just builds really well. The performances are great. It's suspenseful. It's probably two of the strongest female acting performances I saw in anything this year, but I don't think anyone's seen it. Nobody's talking about it. They won't get nominated for anything, but it was fantastic.
Does it have distribution? Is that going to come out?
I think it came out in the summer.
Well, it's already been out.
Yeah, when I looked it up, I was like, did this come out somewhere already? But looks like it says 2024. Maybe it'll get a North America. Because it is, I think it was British. I don't even know.
Well, both the main actors are British, so that's okay. I will keep an eye out for that.
But definitely, if you can see that anywhere. And that's the kind of, because it's so small, it's not the kind of film where I'm like, oh, I wish I. It's still great seeing it with an audience in a theater.
Right.
Because the suspense, you get the gasps, you get the whatever. But because it's one of those movies that, you can tell, oh, this would have been a play as well. You don't need to see it on a big screen. But it is better, I think, to get that kind of communal experience. But odds are, most people, if they do see this movie ever, they won't be seeing it in a theater.
Okay, that sounds really good.
Yeah. So for TIFF this year, for me especially, this was my first year sort of taking off time. I actually stayed downtown a hotel because I don't know if you met Toronto traffic, but we literally had to reconfigure our city just to deal with Taylor Swift being here for six
Yes.
days. So I actually stayed in a hotel downtown for 4 days during TIFF rather than commute back and forth from like the same area code. I'm not in the 05, the Toronto equivalent of Bridge and Tunnel. I'm literally in the six, but
Right.
I it would have taken me two, three times as long to get back and forth than it would have years ago. just because of traffic construction and streetcar diversions. So I did actually get to see quite a few things I enjoyed this year, Tiff, but I'd like to hear, especially since you saw 47, give me your, and it doesn't have to be like your best, but just like you're really glad you saw it, Tiff, what you enjoyed there.
Well, I mentioned Santosh already, so that would definitely be one. That's one I liked a lot. Excellent movie, as I said before. Hope people get to see it. I expect that some of the art houses will pick it up and play it. Another one that's getting a bit of festival and love from the critics is The Girl with the Needle. That was a Dutch film, mainly in black and white. And just harsh times between the wars in Europe. People returning from wars with all sorts of scars, both mentally and physically, families being torn apart, and what people do when they have an unwanted pregnancy and really have nowhere to live, or literally their bathroom is a bucket, and now they're bringing a kid into this world. So those are two that really stood out. And I'll throw in like a popular one, which really surprised me, The Wild Robot. I was extremely surprised by that. Had a gap, it fit a gap. It was playing in IMAX and the big IMAX 12. Hey, I'll go to the press screening for that. And it is fantastic how well that's done, how the robot adapts in a situation it should never have been in, how it learns language and how to relate to the animals, and really becomes one of the animals on this island. So I'll give those three out as three ones that were I really liked a lot at TIFF.
Did a lot of people cry in your screening of Wild Robot?
I was in a press screening and people were crying in a press screening.
I had a similar, I didn't go to a press screening, but I had Gap and it fit. And so I got to see it on IMAX. And definitely the woman on my right was a lanyard wearer. So I don't know if she was just regular industry or press. And then there was just like a couple, like normals on my other side. We all shambles by the end, and the couple on the left were like sharing their candies. Oh, I wish I had tissues to give you. That movie destroyed me. Like I was not expecting that at all.
Yeah, that's what festival is all about, right? You're not planning to see something, you pick it up. Oh, I guess I'll go see this.
The
I'm not
lanyard,
expecting
she was weeping
anything.
too. We like you're weeping through the credits. Like you're just it doesn't take its foot up you like. For the whole third act.
And the good thing about it, the guy beside me, who I see around a bit, he's a writer out of New York, he'd be seeing it for the second time.
Oh,
So if
wow.
you're coming back for a second time, this is probably going to be good, right? So that I had that going in. And then from the beginning all the way through is just it's incredible, excellent movie. And it's up, we'll see if it wins Golden Globe or not. It might be that or another one, Flow, which I missed at TIFF, but I saw at the Lightbox. And a lot of people like that one as well. I think it's between those two for the animated. We'll see which one wins, but I think it could be up for a few awards.
Well, at least one other podcast I listened to was saying they really think The Wild Robot should just be in contention for just regular Best Picture, like forget animated because it was that good.
I could see that as well.
Like it's great. That would have been on my list, but I kind of suspected you would because I felt like even though you see so many, those kind of really heartwarming, sweet ones kind of really punch through. Like,
Yeah, for sure. Went through all the dread and death and dying that I saw and assisted suicide things I saw this year. So
Come through.
it did punch through.
For me, one of my first, I'm liking this a lot more than I thought I would, and it had some fun twists, was Seeds by Kinetio Horn. So she wrote and directed it, and it was sort of a thriller. It starts off very, woman going to the cabin in the woods and ends. Kind of like a indigenous John Wick.
So for that one, what I was trying to figure out is what pizza does she live above in downtown Toronto? If she lives above a pizza, right? Where is that pizza? I'm just trying to figure out where that was, but I could never
I'm
link
like,
that
is this
word.
the old like I don't know if it's still there, but there used to be one by like Broadview and Danforth. Is that
Yes.
one still
I
there?
thought
I
about
was
that one.
wondering if it was that one.
Yeah. Trying to figure that out.
Nobody asked that at the Q&A, but I think just everyone was so excited to see Graham Greene. And then the other one that I really liked, and I think that did just come out, is The Fire Inside, directed by Rachel Morrison.
Again, I had a gap. I was supposed to go meet someone, this Finnish person that deals with festivals. Meeting got canceled. Now I have a gap. And it was playing, I want to say Princess of Wales. Let me go see this movie. And it was really good. The whole cast was there. I had no idea of the story. You know, she doesn't fit the mold. You know, she's not what they want to present as. You know, America's Next Sweetheart, but it was excellently filmed in Flint, Michigan. Yeah, it was gritty, gritty, gritty. So yeah, I like that one a lot too.
And Ryan Destiny, who I've loved ever since that show Star. I don't know if anybody's watched Star, but it was a show that I think it was only on Netflix. At least I only watched it on Netflix. And Brian Tyree Henry, who everyone loves, and Ryan Destiny's portraying Clarissa Shields, who's like the only woman who's won back-to-back gold medals in boxing at the Olympics.
I'm not sure that's not only person.
Or only
I
person.
think it's only
Yeah, only
person.
person.
Yeah.
And you would have never heard of her because she definitely does not present as what, the marketing companies want to
Right.
put on their product. And what we see in this film, it's not just the sort of hard scrabble training montage. It's also what happens after when you're not the person that's getting the endorsements and whatever. And you think, oh, I've done all this work and I've won a gold medal. And right now, there's a lot more transparency around what companies or what countries pay their athletes just for winning a gold.
Right.
And the thing in North America, especially in the US, is like you do get something, but most people are looking to make that recurring revenue off of endorsements afterwards. But there's no guarantee that the IOC or whatever body or group that your sport is associated with is going to help you get those deals afterwards.
Right. Yeah, you're not Wheaties box material. As she found out walking around and seeing other people that were at the same Olympics that she was at, and they're getting all these endorsement, Wheaties box, this type of thing, ads, and none of that was coming her way.
And she had a great story too. And that's the thing. And that just shows the lack of imagination too of some of these companies. Because her story, especially like coming from Flint and the background and the gym and getting trained by somebody who wasn't even like a sanctioned
Right.
trainer. I mean, it still is frustrating that the first time I really heard of this woman was this movie. But now, like, I follow her on Instagram now, and like, she's having her best year because she's
Right.
going to all these festivals and movie premieres, and it's great to see her and not just the actors in the movie sort of getting there.
Right. And she was there at my screening. I don't know if they had her come up on stage. And they might have just had her stand up
They had her
in the
come up to
audience.
the stage at mine.
Okay. I think she just stood up in the audience in my. But yeah, you know what she looks like. You recognize her now. She's recognizable. So good for her. Excellent film.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And then the other film that I really liked that kind of surprised me, another crier, was The Mountain. And that was directed by Rachel House.
Yes, I saw that too.
And again, you think it's just like children shenanigans, sort of your main character, it's a young girl that is in active cancer treatment, and they don't kind of tell you from the beginning, but you get the idea it's not going great. And she's built up this mythology in her head that if she gets to this mountain, she will get to realize something or get a connection with the missing parent. And many things are attached to this mountain for her. So she escapes from the ward that she's in, the hospital ward, and then meets up with these other two boys who are also, for their own reasons, needing to or wanting to get away. And they go on a pilgrimage, if you will. And it's great in that none of these children are friends before. So you have the dynamics of them
All different backgrounds,
interacting with each
different
other.
family situations.
Yeah. And then your B plot is the parents that their kids are missing and realizing in their own different ways how they may be more communicating with their children the best as they have to deal with each other to try to find their kids.
Right. And again, the parents are also from very different walks of life as well.
Yeah. And in the whole preposterousness of like these three children running off, the fact that one of the parents is an actual police officer,
Right.
it does help with the okay, I can believe that this would be allowed to go on for this long without it being a whole, multiple Amber Alert situation.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they do that in that part of the world.
Yeah. And yet another movie that, makes me want to visit New Zealand because it just was gorgeous. Yeah. But it was probably one of the sweetest films that I saw at the festival.
Yeah, I like that one a lot
Yeah.
too. Another good find. Excellent choices.
Yeah. So for other festivals, I mean, for Bits, you said it was one of the strongest years, and I'm still very, very bummed that I didn't get to go this year. I'd love to know about a few of the ones that you guys had programmed there that you really enjoyed.
Well, I'll start with one that I programmed, Pins and Needles. It's a thriller, and it's about this diabetic biology student out in central Ontario woods doing a project with local bees, that type of thing, ants and foliage, and has to go back to town to make her brother's wedding. There's an annoying guy that's kind of hitting on her, but she kind of gets away from him and has a friend that looks strangely like Timothée Chalamet, who I pointed out to him when I was talking to him later, but he gets that a lot, and drives her back to the city. They pick up a friend of his, a distant friend of his, your brooding 50s guy, the black leather jacket and white t-shirt, and you think he's going to be the issue, but it totally flips on its head. And it turns out to be basically an organ selling film that these three find themselves caught up in out in the woods, and it just gets more and more harrowing. Every turn brings more danger, and it's a question you have to yourself when you're out, maybe late at night, maybe you had two or three more, and you think, should I walk down that alley where that door is? Maybe I shouldn't, because something could happen if I walk down there. Well, this is what could happen if you walk down that alley and you get chloroformed and dragged away, and you wake up and the plastic's under you, and here you are. So, excellent thriller. That was really good.
Now, I pity the fool who tries to get my organs. I'm basically pickled at this point, but sure, if you want them.
Then we had another one that was our best film called Scared Shitless, and that one's basically about a apartment where there's a doctor that brings this monster, but looks more like an octopus type thing, and it gets into the plumbing, and it kind of goes around and comes up from the plumbing and takes out its victims, and it kind of works its way through, and then there's a dad and a son. And the son's a germaphobe, and the dad's a plumber. So the dad's bringing the son out for the first time, and this germaphobe son now has to deal with plunging toilets, which, of
Oh
course,
my God.
they're not gonna like.
No.
And the first job he goes to, there's this creature coming up from below and killing people. So that was really good. And then the third one I'm gonna mention is a short. It was called How to Stay Awake. And this is one that has stayed with me for a bit. I know we're going to talk about that a bit later, but this stayed with me for a bit. It's basically a woman trying to stay awake when she falls asleep. And there's like a shadow that appears, kind of like a witch type figure. And it hovers over her, is putting stuff into her mouth that looks like white pearls going to her mouth from her mouth. It won our Best Cinematography Award, directed by Vanessa Magic, a local director. And it's just a scary thing about what goes on. You know, you wake up and you get a bite here and there. You don't know where that bite came from. It's in that vein. So very well done. Black and white, good length for short, and one that I liked a lot. And I just wanted to mention a short because Blood and Snow is very lots of very good shorts at Blood and Snow. First thing I noticed when I came aboard as a programmer is how strong the shorts are. So I did want to mention one of the shorts.
Oh yeah. Yeah, the 2, 3 years ago, I don't remember. I think was it pre-Panda Bear? It may have been. The shorts program at BITS was really what hooked me on it as a festival because they were some of the strongest shorts I'd ever seen.
Yeah, the shorts are excellent.
For me, the Windsor Film Fest, which it never even occurred to me to go to that one before, but proximity, price point, all of those things. And also having gone to Windsor a bit more in the last few years. And I went to the University of Windsor, so I'm familiar with the town.
Okay.
They've also, the downtown became a bit of a dead zone when they had their depression. And then one of the ways the city's tried to reinvigorate is both St. Clair College and the University of Windsor now have campuses like right downtown. So two of the theaters, like one is in the new sort of music media school for the U, and the other theater is part of the college's campus. So that also helps because they had like the Capitol Theater was always there, but the other two theaters being within less than 5 minutes on foot from the Capitol, it's sort of the center. It's great, like very walkable. There's only really two hotels to stay in downtown Windsor, and both of them are right in the middle of their kind of little triangle of movie theaters as well.
That's good to hear because I was there 8, 10 years ago for an insurance industry event for 2 or 3 days. And driving in, as you said, you come into downtown and every other place was boarded up. And we stayed at the casino, right? So until you got to the casino, and then around there was kind of built up, but you're coming through town, it's like, ooh, you know, this wasn't looking good. So I'm glad to hear it's bouncing back.
So one of the movies I saw was a documentary called Sugarcane. This was about a native community where they are investigating a bunch of missing
Right.
children. And it was directed by Julian Brave Noisecat and Emily Cassie. And this documentary, you really spend time with different people and people who are some of them still very involved with the church and not, I'm going to say, even a bit of denial. Like, there's one whole segment with an older man who obviously he's not 100% indigenous, and him and his wife are doing, I don't know if it was Ancestry or 23andMe, and you know, she's reiterating to him, okay, so we've got your results back. And it appears that there are many branches on your DNA that are related to this. And I don't remember the name of father, like mix something. Like basically,
Right.
it's obviously the same last name of this priest who worked at the school that was your actual biological father, and it was not a consensual relationship with your mother. And he's like, well, I need more. I think I need more information. I'm not sure. And but then in the last act of the film, you see his character, well, not is a person. He goes to the Vatican as part of their not apology tour
Right.
when they started to, you know, publicize the residential
Acknowledge.
school
Yep.
situation. And he goes to like the specific sort of group that ran his schools to basically say like we just need someone to say they're sorry. Like this isn't okay. We cannot do it. But like all this political stuff, like, and you know, these speeches that sort of acknowledge that it wasn't okay, but like we just want someone to look us in the eye and say we're sorry. So we don't see him have any kind of meet up with any of what would be his biological family, but he goes all the way to the Vatican to sort of look the leaders of the church in the eye and get that moment. But
Wow.
the main family that we follow is sort of Julian Brave Noisecast family. And as we're hearing about other people in the school and the horrible things that they were doing, you also are getting gradually like his family's backstory throughout it. So you get like a reveal at the very end that really hits. And there's a lot of, documentaries and news stories about this, but this was probably, I would say, just from a framing choice storytelling perspective, one of the best that I've seen. Yeah. So I would recommend it, but it's also like obviously not an easy watch.
Right.
Yeah. One of the films that I really enjoyed that was a surprise, Drive Back Home. This is another one where I'm like, I don't even know if this got released. It's Alan Cumming is probably the only person in the film that you would have heard of. The other main lead is Charlie Creed Miles. He was great. And it's set in 1970, and a small town plumber from New Brunswick has to drive all the way from New Brunswick to Toronto to pick up his brother, who was arrested for having sex with another man in a public park. And it's based on the true story of the director Michael Klowalter's father or grandfather, who I guess had something similar happen in their family. And back, I guess, in the 70s, this was a common tactic of the police to not only arrest people for these acts, but also out them. So the only way that you could avoid jail time would be if your employer or a family member came to get you out of jail.
I see.
Yeah. So the whole sort of trip back through Ontario and Quebec to New Brunswick, these two brothers, and obviously there's issues where they're dealing with things that went on when they were growing up. The brother moved to Toronto because his family
Right.
obviously knew, but weren't acknowledging it or dealing with it. And their relationship resolves as they finally talk about a lot of things that they never talked about
Right.
growing up. And it was just another great one where I realized I'm starting to really like these movies that, like, oh, this was definitely or could have been a play.
So I'm seeing here this is getting
Yeah.
released. It's staying here. January 4th is getting a release.
Okay.
I'm seeing that here. So
And
looks good.
then the one that was perfect to watch in Windsor, and literally a bunch of locals came up in the intro to the movie, like local this, local that, was Union. This is the documentary about the Amazon workers in Staten Island that tried to go up against Amazon and get unionized. And the main person that most people have heard of is Chris Smalls. We saw a lot of him on the news during lockdown, especially. But just watching the great parts, which was sort of the community building, but then also the depressing and horrible parts, the tactics that Amazon used to like break the spirit and the organizing ability of the union. Are there larger unions not wanting to kind of co-sponsor this kind of upstart union because they wanted to sort of start their own and not just be swallowed up by one of the other unions that maybe wouldn't, campaign for them as much? And that as of, the end of the film, you get that they still are fighting. Like they haven't, like they got enough votes to be able to unionize, but because of the size of the monster they're going up against, they still aren't there. And
Yes, Lord Bezos is hard to battle.
I mean, the best thing for them was his space trip, right? And that was what really helped them get that groundswell from some of the people who worked there that were like, listen, I'm just here to get my paycheck. But yeah, it was really frustrating, but also inspiring. And seeing it in a heavy union town like Windsor, that's like the best kind of place to see
Right.
that movie. Like when I went to university there, and there was a strike for the union that included like the food services people on campus, You literally couldn't order food to get delivered to your dorm room because even just other people in the city, whether they were in that union or not,
They support.
they were supporting them. Yeah. I lived off hot ham and cheese from 7-Eleven during that time. And you're fine with it because it does really seep in. So union, I would say, see it, but it also will make you feel very conflicted about ordering from Amazon.
Right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. But it's hard though when you can get up at 3 in the morning and want something
Yeah.
and the next day it's at your door and you're
Yeah.
going over to get
Oh
it.
yeah,
So,
no, I still do,
yeah.
but less. I try to a little bit
Yes.
less now. So we've both seen a lot of movies this year, but what's the movie that gave you the most nightmares or scene that you couldn't shake? Or
I'm going to say small independent horror film. Canadian film called In a Violent Nature. Chris Nash wrote it. Chris Nash directed it. Roddy Barrett's in it. And it's a horror movie from the point of view of the killer, which is what I really liked about it. So, your normal horror movie, group of friends are kind of around a campfire, you see them. They're talking and chatting. They're having conversation. All of a sudden, into the scene pops the killer and starts killing people. So, with this perspective, you see it from the killer's point of view, rumbling, wandering around. You kind of hear the noise of the fire in the distance at first. He comes closer. You hear it getting closer and closer. He comes closer. And then you see him come through in a scene, and people try and scramble and off he goes to do his thing. There are some killings in this that you just won't be able to get out of your mind. Especially me as a yoga person, there is this woman doing yoga on her mat with the headphones in, doesn't see or hear him come up, and he turns into a pretzel, literally, basically. And just some other really good killings as well in this film. So this one is stuck with me. They go back to his past. You see some killings from there. There's one in a lake when you see people in the distance at a dock. He comes to the edge of the lake. He sees them over there talking. He walks forward. He goes into the water, and then someone's just sucked down about just, and there's hardly any soundtrack to this either. He goes in the water, there's silence. You just see them over there talking, someone's kind of swimming, and then 2 minutes later, they're just sucked straight down, that type of thing. So, yeah, it's a very huge success story. They did it for pennies. It made over $1 million at first. I don't know where it's at now, box office wise, but that has probably doubled by now, I would think, for what they put into this. So, bravo to this small little film.
All right. Well, for me, it's a literally just one scene within a movie, The Substance, and
Yes.
it's not what you think. It's Dennis Quaid eating shrimp.
I heard a lot about that scene. People do talk about that scene a lot.
It is in a movie full of grotesquery. It is the one that it stuck with. I could not eat shrimp for a while after watching that myself. That moment is just the mastication and the way the camera just focuses on it, and there's sort of this aioli or something that he's dipping it in that it's also got. It's disgusting. His character is a disgusting person, so you can imagine that this is how this man eats food in front of people, like a power move. I close my eyes just talking about it and I can see it. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of visuals from that movie that stick with you, but that is the one that gives me the ick the most, and maybe because it's the one that could actually happen versus the other things.
So I've seen that cast being interviewed many a time, and that question comes up all the time in Q&As that they do. They're asked about the shrimp scene over and over and over again. So that did have an impact on the audience. and maybe one that the team wasn't expecting
Yeah.
what big impact it's had. But every time they do a Q&A, that question is always asked. Someone always asks about the shrimp scene. So yes, it did have a major impact.
Okay. Well, good to know my nightmares are shared, at least in that one case. Optional, if you wanted to talk about something that you saw on streaming or that you saw through a screener link that you wish you saw in a theater with other people.
I didn't really see a lot of screeners
I mean, you saw a lot of
this
movies in
year.
the
I
theater
saw a lot
this
of
year.
movies. I did a lot of theater this year.
Yeah. For me, the only movie that I was kind of like, oh, this might have been fun in the theater, I saw Fall Guy eventually
Right?
on streaming. And I was like, oh, this actually wasn't bad. And I guess it didn't do that well at the box office. But after watching it on the stream, I was like, this would have been served better by me seeing it at theater. Because it's basically just one set piece after another. The whole premise is he's like a stuntman.
Right.
And yeah. I think I would have enjoyed it even more if I watched it in theater, but it came out of time when there was a bunch of other stuff and didn't really see a need to see it.
Yeah, I'm just kind of looking through some of the things here, and I saw a lot in the theater. I'm looking at, a lot of nominees here, rounded about, and nothing I really saw at home
Yeah.
or streaming. Oh, first of all, I got rid of a lot of my streaming services because I watch stuff on YouTube now all the time, basically. So I got rid of the streaming services. I don't have them anymore. So no, not really. This I saw a lot in the theater this year.
Okay. And for any category, if you could pick the winner, give me one.
Okay, this is where I'm going to talk about The Brutalist.
Okay.
So finally saw that, and I'll get back to my horrific mistake. So managed to get to New York last minute, 3 4 days in and out. Saw about five films. I got out of there, and I made the choice of seeing Joker Part Two, hence my aversion to musicals right now, over The Brutalist, one of the worst decisions I've ever made. But finally caught up to it here. We're blessed in Toronto, the light box with a lot of amazing movies. And that movie, The Nickel Boys, I was talking about, is playing in January at the Lightbox. So I'm going to
Okay.
catch it then. So I saw it the other night. It's walking in, started at 7:30. I said, oh, it's long. It's going to end at 10:30. I'm looking at the sign they have up front. The end time is 11:17
Ooh.
for most of the 10:30. And I knew there was an intermission in the middle of that, a 15-minute intermission. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be here for a while. So Adrien Brody, best actor, give him the statue now. Hungarian Jew, built a lot of the major structures in Budapest, was identified off to a concentration camp, gets out, and in one of the first kind of best sequences I've seen in a while. There's some dark tunnel. You don't know where they are, what's going on. They're in a dark tunnel. You kind of hear people walking on wood, what's going on? And then you're realizing they're on a boat that has just come into New York Harbor. He comes out from the dark, he looks up, and the first thing he sees is the Statue of Liberty.
Oh,
That's
wow.
like the opening kind of start of this movie, right? So he's in Ellis Island. He has a cousin in Philadelphia. So that's where he goes, and that's where he gets his start. And struggles for a bit, meets somebody rich, and kind of becomes a benefactor to him getting back to being an architect. And it's about the relationship with him and his cousin first, what happens there, because his cousin has got rid of everything of him that's Jewish. Has like an American name, has married a Catholic woman, has converted, but the Brody character's keeping Laszlo's keeping his Jewishness. He's not getting rid of that. He has a wife and she escaped too, but she's stuck in Europe and can't get over for years and years. So this movie starts in 1947 and goes through to 1980.
Wow.
There's a big gap at the end, but that's the time it covers. And he battled a lot of demons, inside and out, relationship wise, feeling remorseful, feeling as he's hated, feeling rejected, ashamed of where he ended up and how things went for him, and then throw in a heroin addiction he picks up along the way because he got his face busted in Europe, and they gave him heroin on the boat to help with his pain. And of course, he becomes addicted to heroin. So all these things mixed together. Excellent film, amazing performance. He's winning Best Actor. A small note to Timothée Chalamet, because I've seen the Bob Dylan movie twice, A Complete Unknown. He's excellent there, but and maybe also Colman Domingo if he gets a nomination for Sing Sing. But to me, that's 2 years ago, because that's
Yeah.
when you go to festivals, you see stuff 2, 3 years ago that are now
Coming
apparently
up,
come up for
yeah.
this year. Maybe a second shout out to him in Sing Sing, because that's an excellent movie as well. But no, Adrien Brody and The Brutalists hand him his second Academy Award right now.
Well, I'm gonna say, had I my druthers, if I could pick for one category, I want Chris Bowers to win for the score for The Wild Robot.
Okay.
Because Chris Bowers, he's already been, winning awards, and he's been getting, great gigs, bigger and bigger gigs. I'd say like his first kind of breakout gig, for good or for ill, was Green Book, where not only did he do some of the work on it, he also, I believe, was the hands for some of the close-ups of the piano playing.
I didn't
But
know that.
yeah, I believe he also, like, he wrote the score. But yeah, I think he definitely was Mahershala's piano teacher. Yeah, he was his
Okay,
stand-in
wow.
for the hands for the closest of the piano playing. But Wild Robot, a lot of those emotional moments, there's especially a flight training scene I
Just
don't
had a
want to go too
flying,
much
just had a
into.
flying part, yeah.
The music,
Yeah.
it's not overpowering, but it does that kind of perfect, almost kind of John Williams level emotional manipulation, in that if you were like on the edge of like a little bit of sniffling, it pushes you over like again and again and again, and it sustains it. But it remains sort of within the storytelling. So it's not too overt. Like sometimes, those other animated films, the music becomes the real star.
Right.
This is the story is still the star, but the music is what's just give you that extra 10 to 20% that's taken from this is sweet moment to this is like heartbreaking.
Right.
Yeah. So all of all the categories, he's the one I would want to, because he's come close, I think, and I think he's won for a documentary short, but he hasn't, I don't think he's won for best for score for the Oscars yet. So I think I'd like him to get it this year for that one.
I'm just looking at the nominees for the Globes. Not that this is a be all and end all, but he's up against Emilio Perez score, which was a very strong one. And then you have regulars like Hans Zimmer in here for Dune Part Two, and that's another amazing score. Of course, it is up. And Trent Reznor is in here with Atticus Ross for Challengers. So,
Yeah, it's always a tough
tough
category.
category.
That's the thing.
Daniel Bloomberg's up here for The Brutalist. That's a really good score as well. But you know what? I'd like to see that as well. That'd be good. Conclave's up, but I haven't seen Conclave. Did you see Conclave?
No. And it was at the Windsor Film Fest too. I was going because Conclave and Nora was sort of, they may have been playing the same night. And I was like, if I'm going to see something big that I didn't get to see at TIFF, I'd rather see Nora with a crowd.
Right.
So yeah, I haven't seen Conclave yet.
I just saw the two popes just like 2, 3 years ago. I figure,
Yeah.
you know,
Yeah.
Vatican
I
doubtful.
saw the two popes at TIFF and I like actually really liked it. And again, it's very conflicting. Like, why am I feeling bad for a couple of popes? Yeah. Like, the Catholic Church is one of the richest, most allegedly corrupt organizations in the world. And yet these two men is like, oh, this is a real story. Yeah. Yeah. No. And that was my same thought when it came to Conclave. I was like, yeah, I just like that other one.
Yeah, I just saw one
Yeah.
like 2 years ago,
Yeah.
a Pope movie, so.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, when you go to enough festivals, it's like, so you've got your Brutalist. It's like, you have, there's certain genres that there's always going to be a couple. And it's like, do I want to see more of this or that? I still calls me back to the day, was doing second picks with a friend waiting to pick up our tickets from TIFF because we were in a bad box. This is back in the box drop-off
Right,
days.
right.
And he was trying to pick his alternate. And this line stuck with me forever. He's like asking a stranger, Chicago Jazz or Holocaust Clowns?
Right.
Like,
The choices.
these are the choices you're
Yes.
making. You're literally like picking by genre. So it is always tough because you're like, have I seen Holocaust Clowns 2, 3, 4 years in a row? Do I need to see it again?
Right.
Yeah. It's yeah, because there's subgenres within all of those genres. And yeah, Conclave didn't make the cut for me. I'll probably watch it on streaming.
Is
Yeah.
it Netflix? Oh, it's
I don't
Netflix
know.
too. Is
I
it
think it
Netflix? Because
is.
the two
Is
popes is
it?
Netflix. Is it
Yeah.
Netflix?
I feel like it
Is it
is.
Netflix as
I'm
well?
not sure.
Okay.
We can look it up. But yeah, so that's it for our year-end and festival wrap-up, listener. Hope you got to see some of these movies. Hope if you didn't get to see some of them, you find them and enjoy them because there's a lot of content out there, but there's still not that many great films.
Yeah, and a lot of these are now available in a lot of different sources. As you mentioned, streaming, a lot of them are streaming. If you happen to be in a town that has a good art scene and art cinema scene, they'll be getting a few of these in for early January, especially the ones that have received nominations for the Golden Globes and are making top 10 lists for all the main publications. So a lot of them should be out there in the next month or so to catch ahead of Oscar season.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming, Norm. It was great to talk to you again.
Thank you for the invite.
All
Always
right.
enjoy it.
Great.